long road that, coming from beyond Boulogne, runs southeastward to the sea in a line of rare directness, had this murder been committed in the full glare of a brilliant January noontide, and no witness was in sight, as far as I could reach, onward toward the hazy spires of distant Rimini, or backward in the direction of Forli. So, well content, Ser Benvenuto, grinning under the shadow of his morion, got him down from his horse to reap the profit of his morning's work. What though in falling the dying man had cursed him? It is true that Benvenuto's superstitious soul had quaked under the awful malediction from those writhing lips, but only for an instant. He was as nimble with spiritual as with lethal tools, and to avert his victim's curse, he had crossed himself devoutly, and devoutly breathed a prayer to Our Lady of Loreto, whose ardent votary he had ever been. Moreover, he wore armor against such supernal missiles as the moribund had hurled at him. The scapulary of the confraternity of St. Anne hung upon his breast and back, beneath his shirt, to turn the edge of any curse, however keenly barbed. Easily, therefore, in mind and conscience, he got him down into the snow, all trampled and slushy where their horses had circled in the fight, and having tethered his own beast, he fetched Messer Crespi's a cruel cut across the hams that sent it off at the gallop in the direction of Forli. Next he applied himself to the garnering of the spoil. The dead gallant was richly arrayed. It was the very richness of his raiment that had caught in passing the eye of Ser Benvenuto, and lured him by its promise. But the raiment that had erstwhile tempted mocked him now, for his prize, it seemed, was gilt, not solid gold. He rose from an unfruitful search, cursing the poverty of the dead man's pockets, cursing himself for the risk he had run in so poor a cause, and weighing in his palm a trumpery jewel he had plucked from Crespi's cap and a silken purse containing some 5 gold pieces. Then, in a frenzy, half-disappointed rage, half-greed, he returned to his investigations. Carefully, piece by piece, he examined his victim's garments, nor paused until he reached his skin, but all in vain. Then he bethought him of the dead man's boots. He dragged them off, and, handsome though they were, tore them soles from uppers in the ardor of his search. He had all but flung them from him in despair when a certain stiffness in the leg of one arrested him. There came a gleam into his foxy, close-set eyes. Thoughtfully, he rubbed his lean, long nose and leered. His perseverance had been, it seemed, rewarded. To rip the outer leather from its lining was an instant's work. He withdrew a package composed of several sheets of paper. With disappointment rising anew, he spread one of these. Swiftly his eye played over it. It was a letter couched in Latin, and from that letter it was that he learned his victim's name. But more he learned, for Ser Benvenuto had been reared for the church by a doting mother, and had not yet forgotten the knowledge he had gained of the Latin tongue. He learned sufficient to make his eyes to gleam anew. He had chanced upon something that might be worth 100 times its weight in gold. But not here, not on the open road and in the glare of light from the sun-drenched snow, would he investigate his prize. He stuffed the papers into the bosom of his doublet and climbed back into his saddle. His spurs dripping blood, he rode his cruelly punished horse some 3 hours later into the town of Rimini, and drew rein at the Osteria del Sol. He had a way of command with him, had Messer Gismondi, despite his sinister face, half wolf, half fox, and though a courtier might have mistaken him for a lackey would certainly have mistaken him for a courtier. The host of the soul received him with all deference, and since the common room was thronged with Borgian soldiery, for the Duke of Valentinois was in town, he set a room apart for Messer Gismondi's convenience. There for an hour, the rascal pored over those documents, mastering the details.